Stay tuned for Occupied Territory, hosted by Mike Fader. And this is Mike Fader. This is Occupied Territory America. And the show has been here for about, what is it now, a year and a half or so? Maybe almost 2.5 years. Time flies when you're having fun. A couple of announcements before we talk about what we're going to talk about today. If you have any response to anything you hear on this show, there is two ways to respond to that, and there's one other thing I'd like you to do. One is, if you're on Facebook, and I know a lot of you are not on Facebook, you can go to our Facebook page. It's called Occupied Territory. Just Google Facebook and Occupied Territory, and you can go there, and you can post responses to things I said on the air today. But what you should do is, since not everybody has heard the show by the time you post the responses, is or is not familiar with what you're responding to, just state what I said first, like in a sentence or two, and then post your response. I encourage, I welcome, I demand, I would urge you to post your responses, all because what I'm going to talk about today, and I think what I talk about every week, is we all have to get together and do something, or the entire country, the entire planet, is going to completely disappear from under our feet. It is, as we're watching it. It's as if you're standing in one of those horror movies, or one of those, one of those thriller movies where you're stuck, like Earthquake or something, and you're standing in the middle of the road one day, and all of a sudden there's an earthquake, and the whole road starts to divide, and it comes straight towards you. It's headed straight towards us. The division, the disruption, the destruction of our democracy, the disruption clearly of our land, of our water, of our air, the destruction of our personal lives to have even the most minimal of comforts, pursuit of happiness. It's happening. So the reason I ask people to respond to this is because I feel like we should build a community, and that community can connect to another community and connect to another community. This is how you get a movement built, to use an old-fashioned word. But this is how things move and how they connect. This is the way, in fact, life begins. And this is how nature works at the most elemental level. There's one single cell, and it divides, and it divides, and it divides, and then it joins up with other cells to form a structure which can be a counterpoint to the other structure. You know, it's the beginning of life. It also could be the beginning of a new culture and a new society and a new economy in this country. So I'm not being grandiose. I'm just saying try to connect up to the Occupied Territory Facebook page. Also, if you hear something on this show and you want to tell other people about this show, please do that. If you have a mailing list, a blog, if you're on Facebook, post the link to this show. It'll be the link to this show should be posted on the Occupied Territory Facebook page sometime this evening or tomorrow. Now, if it is not, if that link is not posted, because once in a while it doesn't work exactly the way it should, if it's not posted, you can go to PRN. You know, you're listening to PRN now. You can go to PRN, just put in Occupied Territory Archives, and you can use that link, you know, today's show. All right? So spread the word about this. The other thing I want to bring up is that I have a new book coming out, and it will be probably available within the next week or two. It'll be on Amazon as an ebook. It'll be a print-on-demand book, and it'll be on Nook. It'll be on various reading tablets. It won't be sold in stores because I'm self-publishing it, like a lot of people are doing these days. Get around the larger publishers and their lack of publicity and lack of interest, unless you're a best-selling author so they can make millions of dollars. This is an updated and revised version of a book I wrote 25 years ago. And to what extent is it political? To the extent that all politics is derived from the way you grow up, what goes on inside your own mind, in your own heart, in your own family, where you learn about politics, in your own house, in your on the block you live on, in the community you live on, in the town or the city you live on, it's all built up from the smallest basic premise, which is you have to behave towards other people. It's called civilization. And you learn it or you don't learn it, or you learn a twisted version of it in the way you grow up and in your own personal life, how you perceive things, how you act towards other people. This is a book. It's the name of the book is A Long Swim Upstream. A Long Swim Upstream. And it'll be released, and I'll let you know when it's released, in about a week or two. And it's about stories from my own life, some of which are actually about politics and a lot of which are about culture. But it's about trying to make your way through the world. And I think it's all related. I think everything is connected. The older I get, the more I see that. So if you want to be notified of the actual release date of this book, and they are very good stories, though I say it myself, who shouldn't? You can go to my website, Feder Files, F-E-D-E-R, F-E-D-E-R, F-I-L-E-S.com, F-E-D-E-R, F-I-L-E-S.com. And now you can take a short break while I turn around and turn on the air conditioner. That was a short break. I'm not fooling when I say short break. That was the shortest break you'll ever hear. All right, so we're looking at the news. We're looking at the local news, your local news. I don't know where you're listening. I live in New York City. But we live in the same country, right? We live on the same planet. And you look at the news, local, national. And is it set up that way in your paper? My hometown paper is the New York Times. So it's local news. It starts out with international news. Then it may start the other way. Tabloids usually start out with local news and then some national news. They rarely cover international news. But a paper like the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, Washington Post, Boston Globe, Pittsburgh Press, I can name a million of them, to the extent they still exist, that the Koch brothers haven't actually bought them, or Murdoch, they usually have international news, national and local news. Every story you read these days has something in common. Every story you read these days has something in common. It is about the increasing and overwhelming oppression of average common people. And I'm talking about 90% of the world's population, anything from absolutely stone poor to the middle class. It's about these people being oppressed, literally killed, and having their lives stolen from them, and their planet stolen from them, and their land stolen from them, literally. By the upper ruling classes in every country. So when you talk about globalization, there's really two kinds of globalization. One is the international corporate state that's kind of forming itself like some sort of globule that gets bigger all the time by consuming human beings. Something from a bad 1950s horror picture. Think of the blob. This is a blob with a plan. This is a blob with a 20-year strategic plan laid out by people who are in charge of all this. Bankers, international corporations, the leaders of royal families in places like Dubai, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, large media corporations. All of these places basically are conspiring to really lock the planet down like a locked ward. Right? Like a prison ward where everything is secured and we're the prisoners. And this is not, often people will accuse me or people like me of hyperbole, of exaggeration. No more. I couldn't possibly exaggerate the situation. It's that bad, right? And we all know it's that bad. We see it. Who doesn't see it, because the media is owned by these corporations, who doesn't see, and it's the greatest sin of all. So people do not get the news. The people who don't see what's really going on or don't hear what's really going on or don't read what's going on are about 75% of the American people. Did you ever wonder why so many people in this country vote directly against their own interests? They will vote for candidates who are running on platforms, who are barely disguised, with some nonsense they say on a political campaign. They're running for people who already, while they're in office, or as soon as they get into office, or almost say out loud that they will take away what remaining liberties, money, property, and food and land that these people have. And yet these people will vote for them. And you wonder to yourself, why do people do this? It's one of the great questions in American politics. Why do millions, even tens of millions of people vote for the rich, vote for the corporate stooges and prostitutes in both political parties? Why do they do this, especially the Republican Party? There's a slight difference. They're worse slightly. And the question is, why do they? I had a listener call me up on Sirius once and said, this is like a chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. Why would they do that? Why? Because, they are in the thrall, in the grip of ignorant people who manipulate them. A lot of that has to do with religion, and a lot of it has to do with just plain stone ignorance that they're brought up on. I guess there's three things. The third thing is that there is no education about history in this country. There is no local history, national history, or international history of the United States and of our government. What this government has done internally and externally is not taught to anyone anymore. Maybe a little bit in colleges, I don't know, but it is really not taught anymore. And so people remain in ignorance. I'm going to have a little water, if you don't mind. Let me just have a little water. That's good. Another product of the Nestle company, no doubt, though I bought it from an organic place. In any case, people are ignorant. They are ignorant. They're not necessarily stupid. I think people confuse those two things sometimes. But most people in this country are ignorant of what politicians do, of what the government does, of what government agencies do, of what we do to people overseas, what we have done to people in our own history, slavery, the murder of 10 million Indians. People are ignorant of the basic fact that, for instance, this entire country was stolen from the people who lived here, and millions of them killed, outright slaughtered, moved into places where they died like flies, or deliberately infected with illnesses. And then a great portion of this country, for a couple of hundred years, the economy of this country was based on the labor of African slaves who were dragged over here to do this work. Most people don't even know these basic important facts. And a lot of the things that America has enjoyed and used and made our country sort of a comfortable place to live up until the last 10, 15 years for a lot of people is stuff that is basically stolen from the rest of the world, sucked up like a giant monster vacuum cleaner from all the other countries in the world so that we can enjoy a comfortable way of life. People don't know this. And the kicker here is, why don't they know any of this? Because the people in charge of universities, of even school systems, of and especially of corporate media, that is to say, most television stations, including a lot of cable stations, a lot of newspapers, a lot of radio programs, especially right-wing radio programs, they are owned by the same people who are stealing everything else. They're on their interlocking corporate boards of directors. And they don't want you to know this. They do not want you to know this. And most Americans, now the people who are listening to me now, most of you already know this. But most people in this country do not know their own history. They don't know what we're doing right now. They don't know that they were like, if you asked, you pick 10,000 Americans across the board in some sort of fair poll all the way across the country, and you say, and you ask them, was America lied to go to war in Iraq by the President of the United States and the Secretary of State and the Vice President? Were we lied to invade and occupy Iraq? Most people in this country, a majority of people, 60-70%, would say, no, of course not. They would never do that because they don't know. They don't know. So part of, I should say our job, because it's kind of condescending, but part of the job of citizens who want to actually build a new world, who want to take back land and the planet and their politics and their economics and their virtual lives back from the people who are stealing it, is to try to educate other people. It's difficult to do that because you fly in the face of all kinds of incredible flag-waving, Bible-thumping, ignorance of a depth and breadth which is astounding. And don't I know it after having been on a radio for 35 years. I have been on a radio almost, I should say, 35 years. This fall will be 34 years. And I have taken tens of thousands of phone calls and gotten thousands of letters and tens of thousands of emails. And people have come up to me on the street. And the level of astounding, aggressive ignorance is unbelievable. And most of the people get force-fed this junk in a kind of recycled way by right-wing radio, by the lies of omission and commission on major television stations, by what major newspapers choose to ignore. For instance, this is called Occupied Territory America, and originally it was called Occupied Territory, based on the Occupy movement and its goals, which is to eradicate especially income inequality. Most people in this country have no idea what the movement was about, what those people were doing there. They think of them as a bunch of layabout, dirty hippies, college students who had nothing better to do. And by the way, some of them were, but it was a minority. The point of the whole thing was to point out income inequality, which is turning this country into a feudal monarchy, going back even before our revolution, right? An imperialist feudal monarchy. And that was the reason Occupy was there. Why do most people know nothing about it or are disdainful or contemptuous of the Occupy movement? Because most, 95% of most major media outlets, radio, TV, and newspapers, and a couple of large internet sites, chose to completely ignore it or to ridicule it. And this is what you're dealing with all the time. All the time. And that's why it's a responsibility, I think, that we all have to try to understand these things and to try to spread the word. I mean, you're not going to go out and there's no soapboxes. You're not going to stand in a public square or in a park. I know, you know, most of the people who listen to me are not going to do that. I'm not going to do it. I do it here. I have the luxury of being able to have a voice to speak on the radio to a lot of people. I do it here. I do it on Sirius XM. And then I do it on Mondays on this station at 4 p.m. And that's where I do my more what I call personal shows. But believe me, it's all the same thing. So it's all connected now. But so we're not going to do that. However, we live in this electronic net world. If you hear a show like this and you pick up the archive link, if you find an article that reveals things, I was just talking to the program director a few minutes before I came into the studio here to do the show. And he's showing me an article in Rolling Stone written by Matt Taibbi. Anytime you find an article by Matt Taibbi, read it. You read it. This guy gets to the bottom of things in a way that hardly anybody does. He is the modern Hunter Thompson. He's really something. It's M-A-T-T, or M-A-T, I'm not sure. But his last name is T-A-I-B-B-I. T-A-I-B-B-I. You could access Rolling Stone or Matt Taibbi, and his latest article is basically about how the international banking community essentially is rigging the whole structure of what everything costs in every part of our lives, and it's much higher, of course, than it needs to be because they've rigged the whole thing to be higher. So. Anytime you see an article like that, anytime you see a video like that, now. Here's the problem with that, right? Like, if you're like me, you open up your inbox, your email, and you see 10, 5, 10, 15, 20 emails a day. You have to check out this link. You have to look at this article. You have to see this YouTube clip. It'll shock you. It'll show you what's really going on. It's hard. There's too much information. So pick and choose. You find something that's really good. And it really will influence other people or educate other people and send it around everywhere. Sooner or later, it's going to have an effect. It already does have an effect. So, like for instance, you could post the archives on this show on a Facebook page or if you have a blog or just let other people know it on your email list. where to start? Where to start with everything that's going on? Sorry about all this. It's allergy season for people like me. Let's start with, here's a good idea. Let's start, people always talk about the right-wingers, especially talk about the founders and the Democrats, blah, blah, blah. The founders of this country. Well, it's important to talk about that because they set this country up. They had the philosophy, the idealism, and they had the common sense, and they went to the trouble of, even some of them risking their lives, of course. They could have been hung. They would have been hung as traitors if they were captured, if we lost the war. They all would have been hung as traitors or shot down where they stood, right? So their lives were in jeopardy when they signed the Declaration of Independence. And when they put the Constitution together, we had already beaten Britain. But just still, the Declaration of Independence is the soul of America. It's the soul of America. Now, I'm going to read a little bit from it and a little bit from the Constitution. And, of course, you have to understand that these are people from 1776, a bunch of basically well-off or even wealthy white Christian men wrote this. So what their ideal was of a perfect society is more almost like a dream or a philosophy rather than anything having to do with the reality of the way they lived their lives. Many people will say that the founders were hypocrites, and I guess you'd have to say that. I'm not excusing them in any way. These are people who held slaves. Women couldn't vote. Women had no rights practically. If you didn't own property in a lot of the original colonies and states, you couldn't vote if you didn't own property. There were slaves. Something like, 10-20% of the people who founded this country owned slaves. Some of them owned hundreds of slaves. Thomas Jefferson, the worst of all. And he's the one who wrote the Declaration of Independence. Nevertheless, and of course, the American Indians, from whom this land was taken by force and intimidation and guile and worse treatment, they didn't count as people either. But let's look at it. Let's start off with the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident. It's obvious that all men are created equal. Now, that's interesting. I'm going to break it down a little bit. All men are created equal? Is that right? So obviously that did not include millions of American Indians. It did not include women who were in no way considered equal to men. It did not include all the African slaves in the country, and there were already probably a couple of million or at least a million African slaves when they wrote this. It did not include people who did not own property in a lot of places. The people who said this, all men are created equal, basically, they were ignoring, at the time they wrote it, about 70% of the people who lived in this country. Now, why am I pointing these things out? Because reality is important to inject into idealism. But I love the idealism of this. Idealism is something that we all have in our own lives. It's something we'd like to live up to. Nobody reaches perfection or reaches their ideal. It would be impossible. It would be supernatural and ridiculous. But it could be something good to strive for, right? I mean, as we all know, right? As human and fallible as we are. But the ideal here is, the philosophy is, that all men are created equal. And that they are endowed by their creator, that's another story. You know, I don't know if they believed it or they threw it in or what. But they are endowed by their creator, whoever created people. They are endowed with certain inalienable rights. That means that they cannot be separated from these rights. And what does that actually mean, inalienable? It's an old-fashioned word. It means you cannot be alienated from these rights, these natural rights that you inherit just by being a human being born on the earth. You can't be separated from. Now, you can have them taken away from you temporarily, as our government does from us all the time, as dictators and monarchists and kings have done throughout history. They can steal your land. They can steal your family. They can kidnap you. They can lock you up. They can take away your liberty. They can take away your food. They can kill you, take away your life. But really, in the end, throughout all of this, as long as you're alive, you really have these rights. It's a question of realizing it and then making sure that you retain them or get them back if they've been taken from you. That's the deal, all right? So certain inalienable rights. And then among these are life, the right to life, just simply to be alive without being threatened or attacked, right? Or having your life taken from you. Life, liberty, freedom. This freedom, freedom to speak your mind, freedom to go where you please, freedom to do what you want, as long as you don't hurt anybody else, as long as you don't harm anybody else. Liberty. To move around, to change your mind, to change your life, to do things that you want to do, as long as you don't infringe on the rights and the liberties of somebody else. And the pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, I don't think that the original founders read a lot of Zen Buddhism. The pursuit of happiness. A lot of us old codgers have finally stumbled upon the wisdom that to pursue happiness is a fool's errand. But if you're in your 40s or even in your 50s, you may not quite know that yet. But so I'll wait for you all to catch up. But I spent most of my life pursuing happiness, and it's the best way to be miserable. I can only tell you that. You can't attach yourself to some one goal, right? But all right, now here. Now, to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, right? The only reason to have a government, to form a government and to have a functioning government, is to ensure the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Think about the United States, our economy, the way your life is, the taxes they take out of your check, the taxes they don't take from rich people, the eminent domain seizures of land in Texas and other states that are wanted by fracking companies, where the state of Texas and other states actually sends law enforcement officers to throw people off. They declare it eminent domain. It belongs to the state of Texas. And then basically in a corrupt way, they sell it off to fracking companies to drill for oil. And they will take local sheriffs or state police, and they will drag old ladies, kids, everybody off land that has been theirs for generations, for generations. Think about the way you work like a dog in this country, and you can buy less now than you used to be able to buy with the same amount of money that you make. Now you're probably even making less money than you once made 10 years ago, 5, 10, 15 years ago, because of the purchasing power of money, because of the cost of everything. Your rent has gone up. Your mortgage payments have gone up. Food goes up. Clothing goes up. Basic things that you need to live and survive, right? And a lot of people have to drive to work or drive to do things in their lives. And I'm not talking about leisure trips or vacations. They have to drive to work. The price of steel, the price of gasoline, everything is going up all the time. But what's not going up is your pay. And the reason it's not going up is because the government will not tax rich people and will let them get away with withholding hundreds of billions of dollars of tax money while they buy yachts and mansions and live in a way that you could only dream about. You could fall asleep and dream about it. It will never happen. And so is that what the government is for, do you think? Now, what does the government do? The government serves the needs of rich people in this country. But it says here in the original document, so it's confusing, right? It says here's the original document. I used to work in a law firm. I spent years working in a law firm, right? Not as a lawyer, as a paralegal. But I'm used to legal documents and to try to interpret them. To secure these rights, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, that is why governments are instituted among men. Otherwise, we don't need a government. We need a government to protect us from really bad, evil people who want to kill us and steal everything from us, coming in from the outside and even internally from the inside. We need a government to protect us from these people. That's why we have police forces. That's why we have an army. You know, this is what the government is supposed to do. And we, you know, we need a government that is going to guarantee us that we won't be murdered where we stand. Life. And a government that actually guarantees us that we have the liberty to speak out when we want, not to have our phones tapped or our emails tapped, which is what the president wants to do lately. There's not a week that goes by that this son of a bitch, Barack Obama, doesn't want to take away another one of your liberties, another one of your freedoms, right? So the government is instituted because we need to protect ourselves. We need to secure our liberty. And we need to secure our right to pursue happiness, whatever that means. In other words, you want to have this for a profession. You want to have this as a craft. You want to move somewhere else. You want to try to live out in the woods and not talk to anybody. You want to have a family. You don't want to have a family. Whatever way it is that you're seeking happiness, you want to eat. You want to be a vegetarian. You want to whatever you want to do. The government should not interfere with that, again, unless it harms somebody else. So we don't need a government unless it is to protect our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Think about your government. Think about your your mayor, your city council. Think about your state legislature. Think about your governor. Think about Congress people from your district. Think about Congress itself. Think about senators. Think about the president of the United States, the vice president, the head of the CIA, the head of the FBI. All of these agencies, do you feel like they are there to protect your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? No. Now they are there to do just the opposite. They are taking away people's lives. They are ruining people's lives. They are crushing everybody's liberties. And they are interfering with our pursuit of happiness by the way they allow rich people and corporations to dominate American life. Okay, so moving onward. Governments are instituted among men for these reasons. And they derive their just powers. They derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. Governments, like the government of the United States of America, or your state government, or your city government, think of this, derives their powers. They have no power unless the consent of the, unless the governed, that is to say the citizens of the country, give it to them. Governments are supposed to, according to the founders of our country, the basic building document of this whole country, the ideal, the blood, the bones, the soul of this country is governments get their powers from the consent of the governed. At this moment in our country, our government, especially I could tell you in New York City, I don't know how it is in your city, our state government and our, especially our federal government does not operate with the consent of the governed because they allow you still almost to the point where still, they still allow you. They may not allow this in 2 years, 4 years, or 8 years. Who knows? But because they still allow you to go to the polls every 2 years or every 4 years and choose who is to be mayor, to choose either a Democrat or a Republican, there is nobody else. And we're not talking about, and there are third-party candidates in this country who stand for powerful ideals, who stand, in fact, for the very ideals enumerated by the founders who dreamed up a democracy that would be functional and would help the people in this country, that would be for the people, by the people, of the people, right? Think of your state government, your city government. My government, my city government, is Mayor Bloomberg. Mayor Bloomberg doesn't think of himself as the mayor of New York. He thinks of himself as the Duke of New York, that the entire city of New York is actually his property, and all of us who live in it are serfs on his land, just like it was 1401, and he was a duke and owned, you know, 4 million acres of whatever it is New York City is. We are his serfs. We're not even employees. We don't even have that recognition for him. We're serfs. If we get out of line to do something he doesn't like, he sends his household cavalry, he sends his guards from the palace out onto the streets and beat people up, break bones, spray people in the face with chemicals, lock people up for no reason. He is an evil man, Michael Bloomberg, worse than you could possibly imagine this guy. The whole government is owned by these people. When was the last time, even though you voted, that you actually, here's a question for you, think about this. When was the last time that you felt, even though you may have voted in the last presidential election or for senator or Congress person or mayor or whatever, or the city council, when was the last time you felt, if you voted at all, that you had the slightest control over or say in what the government of this country at any level does for you or does to you? Do you feel like you have any control whatsoever? I would be amazed to hear from anyone. If I was talking to you all live now in a big auditorium, right? I would be amazed if one hand was raised saying, yes, I believe I actually have an effect on my government. No, you don't anymore. You don't anymore. The only effect you have on your government right now is if you live in a small town, in a rural area or a tiny town somewhere, and you go to a local city council meeting or you influence what that city does or that, what that municipality does or that small town does by going to regular meetings and standing up with other citizens who live in that place and saying, no, we're not going to allow you to do that. And that times that often works, right? Okay, so remember, this is more important than anything. Governments are instituted among men to secure these rights, and they derive their powers from the consent of the governed. Just because you vote every 2 years or 4 years, every 4 years for president or whatever, they, want you to think that that is giving them consent to govern. It has nothing to do with it anymore. It may have once, but it has nothing to do with it anymore. Your vote is a joke. Your vote is a joke. Unless you vote for a third-party candidate. And why do I say that? Because then the people will say to me, but a third-party candidate has no chance. Well, one reason they have no chance is because you don't vote for them. Get that? I'm in a bad mood today. So I'm talking in a harsh manner, but you have to forgive me, right? Sometimes that happens. But if you vote for a third-party candidate, like the Green Party, like Jill Stein, or Rocky Anderson, the Justice Party, he's a former mayor of Salt Lake City. If you vote for people like this, you're voting for people who actually have the same ideals and the same conception of government as the founders of the United States of America. These are beautiful ideals. These are the perfect ways and the most beautifully expressed ways in which we should have a government and what the government is for and what our society should be for. But if you vote for the Democrats or the Republicans on any level past city council, even for state legislatures generally, if you vote for any of these people, you're wasting your time because they're the same people. They get their money from the same corporations and the same rich people. They are just as corrupt as anybody in any other state or any other level of government. Vote for third-party candidates. Once in a blue moon, have you ever seen a blue moon? No, I never did either, so whatever that means. Once in a blue moon, there is maybe a Democrat somewhere at some level who is worth voting for, but hardly at all. And here, this we'll move on to the next part of the Declaration of Independence, that whenever any form of government, like our form of government, becomes destructive of these ends, and let me repeat what these ends are. People have certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. To secure these rights, deriving their powers from the consent of the governed, that is us. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. You live in the United States of America. I live in the United States of America. You feel safe and happy? I'm not talking about terrorists from overseas. Or terrorists who live among us. You know, the number of traffic deaths and gun deaths in this country is something like 100,000 a year or 150,000 a year. When we're talking about terrorism, we need to look a little closer to home. So we have the right, according to the founders of our country, we have the right to alter our government. Altering the government did not mean to them, and it does not mean now, that we vote for either the Democrats or the Republicans. What it means is we alter the actual structure of our government, how it is structured. Now our government, although it was conceived in a very intelligent, practical way with, you know, three branches of government, our government structure no longer serves 90% of the people of the United States. Let's say 75% of the people of the United States, and that includes 99% of the people who are listening to me. I'm presuming that very few of you, if any, are rich, right? If you're rich, this government, the government of the United States, the state government, even local governments, they serve you. They're there for your life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They're there to make sure that you're feeling just fine. If you are not rich or very well off in this country, the government is there to make sure you don't feel fine so that the rich people can keep feeling fine. That's what they're there for. Now, so when the founders of the Constitution of the United States of America said alter our government, they're talking about altering the social structure of, and the political structure and the economic structure of the entire country. That is to say, maybe there's a better way now. We have been around in this country as an organized country for 237 years. 237 years. I'm going from the Declaration of Independence. It is time to restructure our government. And in some cases, if it's that bad and that oppressive, and it turns out to be the very entity that is taking away our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, we have the right to abolish it. What were the founders telling us? We have the right to revolution. It is true. As an American, you know, this word is it's a word like, you know, we're so brainwashed in this country. When I say we, you understand what I mean by we, right? Okay. We're so brainwashed. The country is so brainwashed that they think that the word revolution, what's the first thing you think of when you think of revolution? Well, it depends how you grew up or how you were brought up. Most people in this country will tell you right away that's an evil thing, it's a bad thing, it's a terrible crime, and it's some commie plot. In other words, it's a pejorative. There's something wrong with revolution. No, revolution, when it needs to be engaged in, when it needs to be done, is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's merely who does it, when they do it, why they're doing it, and how they do it. A lot of revolutions, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution in 1917, French 1789, revolutions in different parts of the world very often turned out to just give power to another circle or group of dictators and lunatics and oppressive people. It always seems to be the way things. That's the default position somehow of human evolution. I don't know why. But I don't believe it has to be that way. I don't believe that. It's important to remember this. The founders of this country saw revolution when it was really necessary, which is what they did, which is why we have a country. When it's really necessary, when the powers that control you are destructive of your life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, then you revolt. What is revolt? Revolt from a root of revolving, right? In other words, what goes around comes around. You turn the wheel. You overthrow, you know? You throw out these people. And you can do it in all sorts of ways. It's everything from organizing massive civil disobedience, and I'm talking about tens of millions of people, over and over again, blocking corporate rape of the land, blocking legislatures that are nothing but hirelings, prostitutes, and bum boys for the rich. Go look it up. So this is what you do. You just stand in the middle of the road. You do what the populists did in the 1890s, what people who were out of work did in the 1930s, what people in the 60s did. Throughout this country, there are incidents where the mass of people was being oppressed by a very few people who controlled the government, and they said no more. They armed themselves. They refused to work. They struck huge strikes, which led to labor unions. They sat down in front of machinery, in front of trucks, in front of trains. And sometimes they needed to use violence. Any time in this country, and just read any good history book, when somebody was oppressing the mass of people in this country and taking away their right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they used goons, hired mercenaries. They employed the local police. The police worked for them, the state police, the city police. Federal troops were called in whenever people wanted to get back their basic life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. The people who wound up owning and running the country called in goons, cops, mercenaries, hired killers, and the state police and the army, called them in with bayonets and with bullets and worse to put people down. This has happened over and over again. In other words, the founders understood that revolution is an ongoing process. It's an ongoing process. It keeps happening all the time, and it needs to keep happening. We can't be passive and sit still and let these people get away with this stuff. Is the government of Pennsylvania, do you think, protecting the life, liberty, and the happiness of the people in Pennsylvania? Now, let's say West Virginia, even worse, the people in West Virginia. something like 20% of the water and the land and the air in that country, in West Virginia, is polluted, is killing people with cancer and heart disease, kidney disease, and everything else. They have polluted thousands of rivers and streams. They have blown the tops off mountains just to get coal, just to get coal. And the governor of the state of West Virginia, the governor of the state even of Pennsylvania, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Department or Association Agency of West Virginia, is owned and corrupt and bribed by the coal companies. In other words, if you live in West Virginia and your family and your children even are dying of illnesses, of tuberculosis, of heart disease, of kidney disease, people are getting cancer all over the place, you can't take a breath without choking. You have emphysema. There's walls of gray smoke and particulate matter covering absolutely everything, and it's in the air. Half that state is a disaster area. It's one of the poorest states, if not the poorest state in the Union, because coal companies go in there and use tremendous amounts of cancer-causing chemicals and explosives and blow the tops off mountains, which land on towns, in streams, destroy forests, destroy vegetation, destroy animals, kill people. And the governor and the environmental protection agencies of those states are bribed and owned. That's the government of those states, who's supposed to protect those people's life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, bribed and owned by coal companies. Do you think it's time for a revolution? Think it's time for a revolution? In one state in this country, there is a state bank. In North Dakota, there's a state bank. Sometimes people decide, and a revolution can happen either peacefully. A government can be altered in a peaceful way. Look at what Gandhi did in India. Look at what Martin Luther King did in the 60s. Governments can be altered in a peaceful way, and the massive anti-war movements, too. It's a way to do that. There's civil disobedience, or if things get out of control and the government is so much in the hip pocket of corporations and they do arrest and beat people. Look what happened in Occupy. When that happens, you have to give a thought to violence. You have to give a thought to violence. It's provided for by the founders of the United States of America. They knew that when things get that bad, and they're almost that bad right now, you have a right to use violence to replace the people in power. I don't know if we're at that point yet. I'm still in favor of civil disobedience, of nonviolent disobedience. In 1919, something called the Nonpartisan League in North Dakota was a vibrant populist organization, won a majority in the legislature, and voted the State Bank of North Dakota into existence. The goal was to free North Dakota farmers from impoverishing debt dependence on the big banks in the Twin Cities, Chicago and New York. More than 90 years later, now, this state-owned bank is thriving as it helps the state's community banks, businesses, consumers, and students obtain loans at reasonable rates. It also delivers a handsome profit to its owners. And who are the owners of the State Bank of North Dakota? The 700,000 residents of North Dakota, the people of North Dakota. In 2011, the Bank of North Dakota provided more than $70 million to the state's coffers. Extrapolate that profit per person to a big state like California, and you're looking at an extra $3.8 billion a year in state revenues that could be used to fund education and infrastructure. They did it there. It works there. It could work anywhere. The kind of revolution we need here is an economic revolution. We need to restructure our economy. We need to take away all the private banks and make them public banks. We don't have to break them up. All we have to do is, for the people of the United States, we can vote to take over these banks. There's nothing in our Constitution or the Declaration of Independence that gives any rights whatsoever. Ignore the last 40 years of the Supreme Court. These people are nothing but corporate stooges. When they said that corporations have the rights of people, this has been going on for the last 30, 40, 50 years. This is an organized plot to have the Supreme Court. Lewis Powell, the main one, a justice of the Supreme Court, who used to be the major lawyer and lobbyist for the tobacco companies. He wrote a paper which actually stated what the purpose was. Take over the Supreme Court. Give corporations the rights of human beings. They are not human beings. They are soulless, moralless, zombies that want to make profit at your expense. They will kill you. They will kill you, right? Rather than give up any of their profit. We have the right, according to our Constitution and Declaration of Independence, to take over these banks if we want to. We could vote for candidates who run on a platform of taking over all public utilities. This is what we need to do. We need to take away all private utilities, make them public. Take away all banks, make them public. Take away the entire healthcare system from health insurance companies and drug companies and hospitals and doctors. Make them all publicly owned. Take away oil exploration. The United States government, right now, as we're sitting here, and every day of our lives for the last 100 years, the Department of Interior has a subdivision which gives licenses for drilling for oil and gas and for digging for minerals, gold, uranium, whatever it else, silver and copper. All of these licenses are granted. Right now, the Obama administration, and before that Bush, and before that, and before that, they give away routinely, have given away, and are giving away now, as I speak, millions of acres of public land, land that we own, our land. This is your land. This is my land. Public land is given away on a regular basis, millions of acres of it. Leased, I should say. It's not allowed to be sold, but it's leased to these people who drill for gold and copper, who frack for oil and gas, who destroy the land, who poison the water and the air, who take all of this, and because of an obscure law from the 1876, which is still used, they pay something like a 1% royalty to the federal government, and they often don't even pay that. They rape the land. They take all this for private profit. The United States of America, the people of the United States of America, your land, my land, needs to take away all the private ownership of banks and put it in the public hands. We need to have a United States bank, or break it down into the Bank of New York, the Bank of New Jersey, the Bank of Iowa, the Bank of Vermont, whatever it is. No more private ownership of utilities, of banks, of hospitals, of anything that has to do with health and welfare. In other words, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, we have a government, and it was instituted to protect those things. Now it serves the interests of the people who are against those things, who want to take those things away from us. We need to have a revolution. At the moment, I would say not a violent revolution. But things keep going the way they're going. That's what we're going to wind up having to have, too, if we want to take our actual lives and our land back. So for our life, for our liberty, and for our ability to pursue whatever it is we think happiness is, we have to take away all these things. No more licenses to drill anywhere in the ocean or on the land to oil and gas companies. No more. No more licenses for that. They don't have the right to that. Corporations should not be allowed to give more than one dime, if one penny, to any political candidate ever. Ever. A corporation is an entity with no soul that is instituted to make profit, and they will do it over the dead bodies of human beings, as they have proved over and over again. And when we're talking about all men being created equal, does that include the 817 people so far who have been dragged dead out of the ruins of a factory building in Bangladesh that at slave wages makes garments to be sold in Walmarts and JCPenney and even fancier places? What about those people? Are all people created equal, or just rich Americans? These are the questions that you need to ask. These are the questions we all need to ask. Look up Fire in the Lake. Fire in the Lake is one of the symbols of the I Ching. There's something like, I forget what it is now, 66 symbols of the I Ching. It's a 3,000-year-old, 5,000-year-old book of aggregated wisdom and knowledge about the way nature works, about the way human beings work internally, externally, about political systems, about economic systems, about everything. It is absolutely one of the greatest wells of knowledge and prophecy that you'd ever go to. This is the book. Forget about this chicken shit Bible that we all use in this country, Christian and Jewish. Forget about the Quran. The book is the I Ching. Get a copy of it. Get a copy of it. And there's one symbol in there. They have something like 66 symbols. They have symbols for laying back, for meditation, for aggression, for cooperation. You know, they have like words that they describe. One of these symbols is, and I forget which one it is now, it's called Fire in the Lake. When things get so bad, and you can understand, you could just intuitively understand fire in the lake. If you had a fire in the middle of a lake, inside a lake, what would you get? An eruption, steam, an explosion, right? Fire in the Lake is the symbol for revolution. Go on your computer, look up I Ching and Fire in the Lake and read what it says. Brothers and sisters, this land is your land and this land is my land. We need to take it back.
I went walking, living on the highway. I saw a bird, an endless skyway. I saw below me, a golden valley.
heart is cold as I was through.